So we got a breathwork instructor training program, Lake Crackerback, 5 days in the mountains. It was January or February. You should come. And I was at the point where it was like, I'd do anything. Like, I just can't be in this hole. So I packed everything up. First time away from Alana, first time away from the kids, with 25 other people sharing bedrooms. It was like, this is so far out of my comfort zone, but I can't stay where I was.
Hello and welcome to the Help My Wealth podcast, Money Rules or Money Rules. Here at Help My Wealth, we are all about empowering financial success in our community of listeners. We hope you find today's topic both informative and helpful. Hi, and welcome to the Help My Wealth podcast, Money Rules, Money Rules. I'm your host, Stephen Logan, and with me, as always, is Hamish Ferguson. Hamish, thank you for coming.
You're welcome. Bit rainy out there today.
Bit rainy out there today. And also with us is Chris Rappaport. Chris, thank you for coming.
Thanks very much for having me.
Hamish is going to introduce Chris because you have had a bit of a history.
Yeah, so I've known Chris for about over 20 years now. And over this time, Chris has run over the last 10 years at least. He's had a good little landscaping business here in the Newcastle region where he's helped lots of people with pools and surrounds and all sorts of designs and things like that. But he's had a bit of an interesting career over the time. A couple of times being self-employed, you know, had a go, got at it for a little while, got back in again. Married, two beautiful little girls, and I guess for me, his journey around just coming out of really just that starting place of, and don't want to spoil the story too much, but starting really from the basics, you know, and from square one. So yeah, Chris's story is a good one.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it. So Chris, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So Chris, you know, let's start at the beginning, right? So one of the things that we really like to dig into with the podcast is just to talk about a little bit about you growing up, you know, and I guess obviously this is a financial podcast, so we're talking about money. So I guess if you reflect back on when you were young, what are the things that you remember that you either learnt or possibly in reflection didn't learn about your childhood years?
I guess in childhood years, growing up in a broken family, housing commission, financial education wasn't really high priority, but I had my pop as my role model. He worked a sales role and worked a lot, and I think I got my work ethic from him. But there was never any financial education. Maybe I remember him saying about, you know, more a career than a job, so having some sort of path, but not a whole lot of business finance stuff in my background growing up. And then probably mid high school, like I was just driven to not want to stay in housing commission and want to change my position. So I think from early on, I had that entrepreneurial drive and I was mowing half the street's lawns and I just started from there, and the ability to make money, and was never a big spender of money, but loved working for it and then seeing and collecting.
So if I think about this, and look, obviously, as we talk through, you know, if there's anything you're not comfortable with, we can sort of move on from this. But when you talk about coming from, I guess, a family that was in housing commission and then you start to earn money, I guess there'd almost be this culture of hoarding or really wanting to hold on to everything you got because of where you've come from. Is there any truth to that? Or
now that you mention it, this probably makes sense. And you know, my whole thing was like not spending it, and then once I was able to buy things, was to, if I was to pay for it, then and I owned it and it couldn't be taken away.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
So that kind of went across into when we bought our first house. It's a lot of drive to own the house so that it couldn't be taken away.
Yeah. And so when I first met you, you were working, I think, for another company that was basically doing work for pools and that sort of thing. So pretty well a labourer, or were you an apprentice, or what was that journey like?
The job was titled a trainee pool builder.
Right. Okay.
So it was an industry. Swimming pool building is, there's no official trade, but you get a pool builder's license based off of experience and a cert for in swimming pool building. Mm. But there was no regulated practical experience. So you did 4 years in the industry, did your cert four, which was a theory-based training modules,
mm-hmm.
and then you went with your references of your 4 years and your cert four,
mm-hmm.
and they give you a pool builder's license.
Yeah, okay. Is that still the case now, or has it changed a bit?
It's still the case now. I don't understand why they haven't turned it into a TAFE course, but it's probably part of it. It is a big industry, but it's not the same as housing.
Yeah.
So it's I know that we do a lot of work with Compass Pools, and they're working with TAFE to try and get something because they have trouble employing people, because you're essentially employing people as labourers, and there's no incentive to end up with a trade or anything. So they're trying to get TAFE to
actually recognise that as a proper course.
Yeah, so that then when they're looking for staff, they have some sort of job qualification that you're getting from it, rather than just come and be a labourer.
And for you, was it a job that you sort of fell into because of different, you know, reasons, or was it something that you actually sought to do? Hang on, I want to get into this industry.
Well, when I left school, I wanted to work with timber.
Mm.
I loved woodwork at school, got a job building kitchens, and enjoyed building kitchens. And the company I was working with, I think I was with them less than 12 months, and then they went bankrupt. I went from there to building wardrobes, which was just like the same thing day in, day out, and I liked different custom stuff.
Mm.
And then one day in the paper, there was an ad for trainee pool builder. It's like, well, I reckon I could do that. And
I can do cupboards, I can do pools.
And that's where it started. It's outside, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And so you transitioned from pools into doing landscaping and, you know, doing much more than just pools. Was that, again, a thought-through, stepped process, or did it just sort of happen?
It was definitely not thought through.
Mm-hmm.
When I was building pools, I was building concrete pools. Everything was custom, bespoke sort of work. In the early days, I was approached by fiberglass pool builders, and it was, come and do this, come and do this. It's like, no, I don't want to do the same thing every day.
Mm.
And then I don't know, I had a run-in with the pool builder I was working with. He didn't want to pay me. I did a fiberglass pool, and it's like, this is so much easier.
Mm.
Why have I been doing this custom stuff?
Why have I been doing this cement custom stuff for so long?
So that sort of led the change to swimming pool surrounds around fiberglass pools.
Mm.
So we don't put the pools in, we just do everything after the pool company.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best decisions business-wise to make that change, to stand on my own and not be a subcontractor to a pool company.
Yeah. And so people understand, tell us, you know, where did you take your company from, righty, I'm going to start doing the surrounds, to where it is sort of now? I mean, you know, there's been a bit of a journey there, and it's not a small enterprise that you're sort of doing.
Yeah, so I started by myself, but pre this business, I've packed the last business up and I went and worked in the mines.
Yep.
So I spent 4 years in the mines, reflecting on what I would do differently. Mm. And the first time I ran the business, I was doing concrete pools, but I was working by myself.
Yeah.
Predominantly by myself. And I sort of ended up in a little bit of a challenging mental position working by myself all the time. So when I was in the mines, I reflected a lot on what I would do differently in business, and spent 4 years there, which allowed us to borrow money for our first investments, which was a little tricky when we were self-employed. So having that guaranteed pretty good income allowed us to get into investment. Once I got into investment and started reflecting on what I would do differently in business and thinking about, I don't need to do the bookkeeping, I don't need to do this, I need somebody to do that, I need somebody to do that, and coming out of the mines with a different mindset of having a little bit of time to step back from what I was doing to look at what I would do differently.
And what do you think, like, you know, you're saying originally it was just you doing all the work, doing the bookkeeping, doing the pool building, doing the landscaping, doing it all yourself. That compared to after that time of reflection and actually going, hang on, I'm going to get, you know,
round pegs in round holes and square pegs in square holes and put myself where I need to be. What was the difference, do you think, from, you know, just both personally and from a business point of view, but actually getting the right people to do the right roles?
I guess personally for me, I was able to do what I want, what I went into business for. And that was
what you enjoyed.
Yeah, I went in there to build things with my hands. And so I felt more fulfilled that I was able to do the things I wanted to do. And then the business kind of ran smooth, a whole lot smoother based off of that. Once I let somebody else do the bookkeeping, and then as it grew, then I had people in the office, and then I had other staff. And that was a big thing for me, having other staff and being able to let go of control. My first staff member was a tradesman, and I remember it took me a long time to let go of that control and let him be a tradesman and not essentially a labourer.
Yeah.
But once I was able to let go of the control, maybe slightly less micromanage and trust the people to do their job, the business just expanded.
And so people can understand, like, when you say expanded, where did it sort of, you know, started from just you doing how many pulls sort of a year to where did you get to?
So it was just me. We're doing a mixture of, at that time, some concrete pools, and I was taking on lots of small stuff, like things that the average bigger company wouldn't want to take on because I was small.
Yeah.
My vision was just to do all of the...
Do everything yourself?
All the little things, splashbacks for kitchens, little bits and pieces I could do by myself. And then a pool builder approached me and expanded. It's like, I need someone to help me. And then once the fiberglass pools come in, I went from one person to 14. And... You know, we're turning over in excess of $2 million with 14 staff, and it was pretty busy but very rewarding, although I went from building things with my hands to managing people.
Yeah, which is a very different kettle of fish.
It's definitely not what I thought I was getting into when I went into business.
But it's also one of those things where, you know, I guess you can't get to the point where you're doing that many million dollars turnover a year with that many staff without you actually having that reflection time to go, you know, what is it that I want to do? What am I good at compared to what can I do but someone else could probably do better? Yeah. You know, I'm sure you you know, were quite happy to hand over the bookwork and not sit there doing invoicing and bookwork for hours a day.
Yeah, I don't miss the bookwork. And letting go of some of that control, some of that micromanaging for me has allowed the business to expand. There was a time where I could have told you every dollar that was owed, every dollar I had in the bank, and micromanaged it, and it felt like I was working really hard.
Yes.
And then it got to a point where I let go of stuff and I kind of didn't even focus on money. And then it was like, we just did a record month.
Yeah.
It's like, how did that even happen?
Yeah.
And when I let the business naturally sort of decrease itself as the cost of living went up. Some of my staff chased big money in heavy industry. And I just let it kind of find its place. And we ended up with 6 staff and I was turning over more than when I had 14. It just found its space and I was less micromanaging and everything kind of, when I allowed everybody to do their job, everything ran super smooth.
I think that story is almost like the perfect analogy of that whole concept of, you know, working on your business rather than working in your business.
Yeah.
You know, like you were working in your business for years and years and years, and then you took that time to self-reflect and go, well, hang on a second now, how would I do it differently? How would I work on my business? And that sounds like it changed everything.
Yeah, there's definitely been a mixture where it hasn't just been stand back and work on the business. Like, I was on the tools this week, but there's now able to separate the two. And we need to work on some of this stuff, and then I can be on the tools. I can see that I need to. I'm still wearing multiple hats, but taking that time to see where we need to improve, and then having some ideas thrown around and allowing staff to run with some of those things.
So it's interesting because I think if I reflect on what you're saying and some of the conversations we've had over these the years, you know, this wrestle between looking at the detail and being able to step back has really been something that you've wrestled with for a long, long time, haven't you? You know, so because I think, you know, coming from, you know, those days when you were doing a lot of tiling and, you know, my understanding of the tiler, precision is really important. You know, you get those lines out of whack and it's a nightmare, you know. So and I think even if I think about possibly if I'm going to change tack here a little bit, so in the amongst all of that, you've gone out, and you've bought your first home, all right? So, and, you know, I think one of the things that I sort of remember about you and Alana buying your first home that time was this, you know, you were so driven. You know, driven to get rid of the debt, driven to get ahead, driven to do a whole range of things. And so, and then over time that sort of evolved. So, you know, as I tell that, you know, how does that sort of sit on you and what sort of thoughts come to mind in terms of what changed for you over that journey?
I guess the initial driven, I think, was wanting to own the house, be financially successful, and I chased that really hard for maybe 15 years. I didn't want Alana to have to go back to work when we had kids. We didn't have kids till we were 30. So I chased that really hard. And I think I don't regret doing that. It's like I'm super happy with where we've gotten to now, but I've learned a few pretty hard lessons along the way, which has changed how I show up now. So I think there was 2021 maybe, Christmas. Had a nervous breakdown, fetal position in the bedroom. Said to the girl in the office, I'm not coming back for the rest of the year.
So this is 2021?
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
So I just said to the girl, I can't come back. Like, I need space. Like, I don't know what... You just do what you need to do. If there's a business there, when I can come back, I'll sort it out. If there's no business, then I'll sort that out as well. I remember earlier in that year, I was at a gym, training at a gym, and they had a breath and ice event. I was drawn to the ice baths. So, yeah, I went there for the ice bath. We did some breath work there. I was just there for the ice baths. But that first experience just stayed with me. And I stayed in contact with that guy a little bit and then just got to the Christmas and I reached out and said, I need to learn more. Mm-hmm. So we got a breathwork instructor training program, Lake Crackenback, 5 days in the mountains. It was January or February. You should come. And I was at the point where it was like, I'd do anything. Like, I just can't be in this hole. So I packed everything up, first time away from Alana, first time away from the kids, with 25 other people sharing bedrooms. It was like, this is so far out of my comfort zone, but I can't stay where it was.
Now, if I can jump in there, because to help the listeners understand, like you talk about being outside your comfort zone, and my, I guess, watching you and Alana over the years has been that you can easily misunderstand how important being in your comfort zone is to you guys. Like you're not risk takers, are you? All right, in a lot of ways, like socially and getting outside and doing things. This, your story is interesting because, you know, going into self-employment, you know, you would say, okay, that's a risky thing. Having 14 staff, a risky thing. Owning, 5 investment properties at one point in time, yeah. Risky thing, you know. So, but then there's other parts to your journey where you'd sort of go, if you'd said to me 10 years ago, would I go to Lake Crackenback and do a 5-day trip on breath work, like you almost would have, well, you wouldn't have run for the hills because that would have been like cracking back. You would have run somewhere else, wouldn't you?
You could have asked me 2 years to come here and do this podcast and I would have had an excuse.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fine. So, you know, so it is, and I'm not necessarily saying there's an answer here, but there's a lot of that we can take away from a story like this where you know, you have evolved in some ways that even to understand where you are today is very tricky. But I'm going to embarrass you for a sec. So I remember years ago we had a couple over for dinner, all right, and we invited Alana and Chris, and there was a point in time when I think you were sort of just looking for connection and community and things like that. So we invited you to come down, have dinner, right, and then there was this natural, okay, we've had dinner, let's crack open a board game, and you could have just thought that they were ghosts, right? They just went so white in the face because the concept of, like, if I had to have made a guess, I would have thought at that point you'd never played a board game in your life, all right? So was I close there or?
It had probably been some time.
bringing that into sort of some sort of question or opportunity for you to talk, I guess, you know, for me, it's, you know, how have you tried to wrestle with this concept of getting outside your comfort zone over time? You know, like, is that something that you feel you can share on that?
Yeah, I think, like, early on, probably even from school, was very lone wolf, stay out of trouble. Like, if I'm here doing my thing, I'm not in trouble. Like, I got picked on at school, and it probably started from there. Developmental trauma, getting picked on at school. So it was just, if I can just do my thing and keep my head down and stay out of trouble, then I'd say that that's where that started from.
Mm.
And it was just by chance that I actually met Alana. It's like, I never went out, and some of the guys that I went to school with, like, we're going to the movies. Yeah, okay, I'll come. And the fella I went out with used to work with Alana, and we met up with them. It was just, I don't know, it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, Alana and her friend said, oh, we're going into Newcastle for a drive. Do you want to come? I was like, okay. And, like, Mum was peeking out, what's happened? Where's he gone? And from there, like, Alana and I have pretty much been together since, and so it went from me being by myself to me being with Alana, and that was really our comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I guess there was a lot of risk in things that I didn't see as risky, but there was a lot of very conserved with social outings and being seen and being heard. I remember as a child, like, you'd be seen and not heard. And, like, it's only been the last 12 months that I've actually worked through that.
Mm.
And, like, that's just unconscious conditioning. And I could be in a room of 20 people and I'll sit there in the corner and say nothing. And then you come over and want to have a chat and I'll talk to you. But I was, like, still working through initiating conversation. But I'm starting to learn that there's not a lot of growth in the comfort zone. And the more that I'm on the edge of the comfort zone, the more I feel alive.
Mm.
So I think that that's changed with the business personally. It's allowed me to do so much more. I've built massive business, I guess, within the comfort zone. And then once I was able to get out of that comfort zone, and even things like having hard conversations was, you know, outside of the comfort zone. And sometimes I didn't have hard conversations with staff, and, you know, the universe has a plan, and if I don't have the hard conversation, it's going to take care of it anyway. And, you know, that happened, and I watched it play out, and now it's like, when I feel like I have to do something, then it's lean into that, because if I don't do it, it's going to happen.
So. Yeah. So if I can just, before we go any further, because I really want to talk about the breathwork stuff a little bit more, but, so let's get this timeline right. So we've left school, we've bumbled around for a couple of years, and then, you know, we've started to get, you know, jobs going, bit of self-employment. So when did you buy your first home? How old were you?
Well, 19. Well, I was 19, Alana was 20 when we bought our first home. And I was maybe 6 months into that traineeship.
Yep, okay.
But I remember that I always had a side hustle.
Mm.
So when I was building kitchens, within 6 months of building kitchens, I was doing kitchens or different bits and pieces, small jobs, on a weekend. Mm-hmm. I always had a side hustle. Mm-hmm. When I was building pools, I had a side hustle. So I think business was always a natural progression. But the first business I was pushed into, but there's always been a side hustle. And I think that it's really been a big pivotal thing for us. Mm. Like it allowed us to own the first home. It allowed me to stay safe in a secure job and still get ahead. But build a business outside of a job and then make a transition from job to business.
Mm-hmm. So 19 and 20, right? Yeah. You've bought your first home. And I think, you know, given where the marketplace is today and how topical it is for people to sort of feel like home ownership is unachievable and that type of thing. So can you remember at all just around, okay, so what were your circumstances like then in terms of, you know, given where your family had come from, you wouldn't have had much of a deposit.
We were living with my nan at the time. Mm-hmm. We had saved the deposit and then we bought a car. Mm-hmm. So then when it came time to buy the house, we didn't have a huge amount of money. And I think we were lucky at the time that Alana's parents were happy to get a guarantor on the loan. So they secured 20% of the loan. The first home buyer's grant was, I guess, okay at that time. There's no stamp duty. So we were lucky that we borrowed 100% of the money. We didn't have to pay stamp duty. We had the first home buyer's grant to buy some furniture. So we were really blessed that Alana's parents helped us out there and allowed us to do that.
But again, like blessed but working, because you had a side hustle, so you weren't just doing one job. You were working pretty hard during the day, and then you were probably working Saturdays or you know night times or whatever, otherwise doing other bits and pieces to try and get yourself back into that safe position. Would that be right?
Yeah.
All right. So let's fast forward on a little bit now. All right, because I think it's we move on. So then how long after that you decided, because you know from my memory and you talk about comfort zone. And there's this common theme of comfort zone and also how easily you find it to interact with people, all right? So because my memory tells me one of the reasons why you got out of being self-employed the first time was but it was just the whole difficulty of managing staff and suppliers and just trying to get that stuff right. Have I got that right? Or
The first business was more I was working by myself. I had no social outlet really. It was like I was just always by myself and just doing all of these pools for all these people in the mines that seem to be home all the time. Mm. Well, when I was there doing the work, it's like, I need a piece of this. Mm. Like, and then I ended up doing a job for a guy that helped me out. But I remember I did a job for a guy that was in the mines and he said, if you're doing okay, don't do it. Mm. So, no, it's got to be better. And it was okay on day work. And it allowed us to buy our first investment properties. Having that secure job definitely helped us out with the investment properties the first time.
And so the mines, you know, obviously helped you a lot. But then thinking that through, it came at a sacrifice, didn't it? Like there was times where you were doing dog watch and shifts and you weren't seeing Alana for quite significant periods of time, not necessarily fly in, fly out, but, you know, sort of, you know, passing each other at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning type thing. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So that was really the turning point for the night, like for the morning. I think I spent 3 years on day work as a contractor and then the contractors lost the contract in the mine and I got a full-time job with the mines and because of seniority, sort of last people in, going to night shift and I kind of was okay with it because I knew there was two people in front of me before I could move through to afternoon shift. So it wasn't too bad. I don't remember getting home a lot of mornings, but I dealt with it. Mm. And then I got moved through to afternoon shift and that was great. I didn't see Alana at all, but I felt more like myself.
Yeah.
To be more like myself and be able to be with Alana on the weekend rather than just be this zombie walking around. And I was happy there. And then there was some, I don't know, some political stuff. Got pushed back to night shift, and I just hated it from there. And it just ate me away. And that's when I spent a lot of time reflecting on what I'd do bit different in business and
planning the next move.
At the end there, I would work night shift and then I would go and tile during the day. So I was just on a mission to set this business up so I could leave one job into the next business. So I would leave the mine and drive straight from the mine and be tiling during the day.
And I think what's important to I think bring through with your story as well is that, you know, a lot of people don't understand the amount of work that it took for you to get to where you got to buy your first home, to buy your first investment properties and so forth. They can look at it and say that you're lucky that you know in-laws helped you out, or that you're lucky you got a job in mines or whatever else. But the cost of that is that you were working, you know, an extraordinary amount of time and sacrificing, you know, that time for money to get yourself ahead. And I think often, you know, people will say they want to get ahead. People will say they want to be able to get their first home. They want to be able to get their first investment property, but they don't recognize the cost of that. And it's really easy for them to look at other people and go, oh, you're lucky. But there really is quite, for you, a large cost in actually getting there, wasn't there?
Oh, definitely a massive cost. Like, I think it's only been the last 18 months that we've really tried to holiday. We didn't have holidays. It was just work. And it got, I guess I didn't holiday as a kid. But I didn't. We're still learning how to holiday.
Yeah.
Like it's hard for us to go away and
turn
holiday.
Off.
Turn off, and it's like, what do we do?
There's
another little story here that I remember that I kept saying to Chris, he's paying off his home so quickly, and I said, mate, go on a holiday. So they planned, I think it was Tasmania from memory, or it might have been down south somewhere.
No, I went to Queensland.
Was it Queensland? And I think it was supposed to be a 2-week holiday. And he rang me a week later and I said, what are you calling me for? And he said, oh, no, we got bored. We came home.
I think it was 2 or 3 days. I think we booked a place. It looked great on the interweb. Turn up, there's a cockroach in there. And I said, I'm not doing this. And at the time, one of the uncles lived not too far from there, and we just reached out and said, oh, dear, just come stay with us for a couple of days. And then it was like, what do we do? Let's just go home.
You should have put a board game out.
Like, we were there at the theme parks, and if we didn't go to the theme parks, it's like, what are we doing? We've just driven 8 hours, and now what do we do?
So I think, like, for you, your story is, you know, coming from the Housing Commission, getting yourself into a job and getting yourself working, saying, right, I'm going to get out of this, really putting in the hard yards, be it working for yourself, but working in the mines, and then going into your own business and continuing to, you know, to work hard and getting to the point where, you know, it was a breaking point for you and you sort of turned around from there. You know, when you reflect back, do you sort of wish that you had done some things differently in that time, or are you sort of going, no, that hard work was required during that time of my life?
Well, a little bit of both. I think
get the balance right.
Yeah, the hard work's definitely there, the hard work needs to be there. But I felt like I probably got to a little bit of a point where it's almost like a machine.
Yeah,
where it was just on autopilot, and it was just work. And like, I feel like almost lost, wasn't feeling. I was just working. So I think, like, now and even in the last 9 months where the business has been doing exceptionally well with minimal input, the biggest thing that's changed is being able to have some sort of balance and connection to myself. And it's like who I really am and what I need to actually do. A lot of time I spent people pleasing, and a lot of that time was pool builders or clients and not myself and my family. And it got to the point where Alana said to me one day that I loved the business more than her, and I was sort of deep in the business. That was when it was getting pretty hard for me, and I really didn't like where I was. And it was pretty tough to hear that Alana was feeling that, and I was hating where I was when I wanted to be home with her and the kids. But I was just in this loop, same cycle, and it was, I could get out of work and out of bed and go to work, crook as a dog, but to try and stay home and be present with the kids and was really hard.
Mm.
So I was just programmed to work. And once I was able to connect more with myself and listen to what my body needed and what the family actually needed, things kind of really just unfolded and took place, and everything's worked out really good.
Mm.
Having the balance and being more in contact with myself. So being able to go hard in business, but also have that time connection for myself. And now I'm a firm believer that the magic happens in the time between the busyness.
Mm.
And the more time we take between the busyness, the more we see things and the more things unfold. It's kind of like there was things in the business where maybe there was suggestion. Things could change. But because I was right in it, I couldn't see it.
Mm.
And the more I stepped back and took back time for myself and was then able to see, okay, so that needs to change, or we need to do that slightly differently. Where when I was in it, you kind of I felt like I had the blinkers on.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Hamish suggested some things at some stage and it's like, oh, maybe that's not going to work, and it's just stuck in a way.
But I think that's the beauty of your story is you know, where you are now is that you can see that you've worked exceptionally hard, you know, got yourself into a good financial position, but also got yourself into a bad personal position, and then you've been able to come back and actually relook at that and get yourself centered. But at the same time, it hasn't destroyed your business. Do you know what I mean? You were actually able to progress through that and get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, so the business, I spent a lot of time building relationships, maintaining a standard.
Mm.
So, like, I put a lot of effort in relationships, and I feel that that's been the biggest thing in business.
Mm.
Because a lot of our work feeds off pool companies, I would go and I would just check in.
Mm.
What's going on? Even the ones we weren't working for. What's going on? Like, where is that? What is noticing? And I was just there. And suppliers of stone that we work with, I'd be checking in there, and I'd be building relationships with all these people. When something come up, it's like, oh, we need someone to do this. They remembered me because I was there all the time.
Mm.
And it's just building those relationships with the key players, I think, really. That and the quality of work, so that when there was feedback from the clients back to those pool companies, then they were seeing me, they were getting feedback from the clients. I had to pull it up there at some stage. We had like a 9-month wait time.
Mm.
And we were turning work away when we had a 9-month wait list. And I just said, like, we need to stop. And that was when we had so many people. Like, we were pumping work out.
Mm.
And we just couldn't do it.
So reflecting back on yourself and, you know, that work and working for yourself and so forth, if, you know, there's younger people out there that are more at the beginning of their career, you know, they're starting out in business for themselves, they're either a tradie or whatever else they're doing. You know, looking back on what you've done, what would you be saying to them as advice?
I think hard work is necessary, but also being able to be smart. Mm. Smart in a way that you don't have to do it all yourself, but also having a clear why you're doing it, and having some sort of purpose and something to come back to, your own practice to really, I guess, feed your desires. Like, early on, I was driven by the money.
Mm.
And then once I got to a point where it was no longer about money, it was then I went looking for my why. So to have a why earlier on outside of the money.
Yeah.
Like, to start with, it was just to pay the house off. And I didn't really have a why outside of that. It's like, just can't be taken away. I just need to own the house. And I remember Hamish saying to me, like, then what? You do when you pay the house off.
Mm.
So, I don't know, we'll just
Why invest it properly?
We'll buy another one. But having a connection with myself, I feel, has really changed how my businesses work. So I can still work hard, but knowing that, right, okay, I need to take time. Like, I need to have tomorrow off, or I need to go to have a sauna, or listen to what my body need and be able to break that cycle and get out of the comfort zone, I guess, really. Because in that cycle, things were really good. Like, the business was really successful, but I was still within what I felt was a comfort zone. And going and doing a podcast would have freaked me out.
Mm-hmm.
But to run a multi-million-dollar business and have half a dozen investment properties was just what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like, that was in my comfort zone. It's like, I remember ringing Hamish up one day. It's like, oh, we just need 800 grand. It's like, what are you doing now? So we're just going to buy this place around there. It's like, it almost become that was just what we did.
Mm.
It was crazy to listen to, maybe 12 months ago, what the kids were saying. It's like, we're just going to build a house there, and we're just going to do this. It's like, can we go and do that? What's that house there? What's that one?
Mm.
Why are we driving past this? It's like, oh, yeah, we're just doing that. It's like getting them to understand what we're doing. It's like, why are we coming to look at this house? Oh, no, we're just building this house. So why are we building? What are we doing here?
We've already got a house.
Yeah.
But I think for you that is your story, isn't it? It's that whole thing of learning that balance and learning that you can have both worlds. You know, it's not about I need to look after myself and therefore not have a good financial backing. You know, I'm going to look after myself and stop working.
Yeah.
It's about going, no, I can still work. I can still, you know, do what I want to do. I can still have a good life balance with myself, and I can still have wealth coming in as long as I've got those, you know, different keys sorted as you sort of go along.
Yeah, I think it really is about the balance.
Mm.
And you can still work hard, and you can still do a side hustle, and having the balance. And balance isn't 50-50.
Mm.
It's what works for you. And if you get heaps out of doing something that's only 10%, that might be balance for you.
Mm.
But when I was 100%
just on the business,
I was out of balance.
Mm.
And now I'm not 100% out here. I'm not 50-50. I've found a balance that works for me, and I'm still in and I'm still out, able to fluctuate between different things. And I've got a few plates spinning with multiple businesses, but I find balance in the mixture of everything I do, where before I was a little bit stuck in a cycle.
Mm.
So what I'd like to do next, if it's all right, is I want to talk a little bit more about the property investment side. And then if it's all right, because it's almost like you sort of went up this hill, you amassed all of this sort of stuff, business, property and all the rest of it, and then you've sort of you're starting to come down the other side, and there's almost this deconstruction or pulling back that you've gone through. So, but before we talk about that, I guess, you know, your journey with property investment. So, again, if somebody young was coming to you today and sort of said, oh, look, I think I want to buy 5 or 6 properties over the next 5 to 10 years, what would those words of wisdom be, and or even some of the learning things that you've gone through in terms of, you know, that journey that you were on?
I think if I was to offer advice to myself on property management, like property investment, would be listen to more to my own intuition. And that's why we've driven and changed things a little bit. I think we were just collecting property, and I was like, why, what are we doing? Like, why do we need 6? Why are we looking at building the next one? Like, where are we actually going? What is it? What's the purpose? What's the reason? What do we need? And once we looked at it and was able to get in contact with where we actually sat, and we're able to sell a couple and move that money into that one, and it's now freed us up to do a whole lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the start, they were all negatively geared, and having so many, and interest rates went up, if I didn't have the business, we would be in a lot of trouble. Like it was costing tons, which was the biggest thing, and what made me look at it and go, we just can't sustain it. But we had a lot of equity. I was like, if we sell those ones, move that equity into there, that makes that positively geared, which allowed me to change some things in business, almost took some pressure off as well. It was just shuffling things around, and it's like building houses was just almost like what we did. It was like a hobby.
But the intuition, would you agree that the intuition that you've developed has also come because you've gotten in and had a go, made a few mistakes along the way, and learnt that lesson?
Definitely. And being able to identify, I think when we did our first development, I kind of felt like we should have been buying something different, but we listened to an advisor and was like, okay, that's what they're saying, we'll go with that. But I felt like we should have done something else. And it wasn't until maybe 2 years down the track, it's like, now I know what that feeling was and I know why. And it's not until you start to see things playing out that you go, that's why I had that feeling.
Mm.
And I should have listened to it.
Mm.
Because I wanted to buy in Medowie, and we ended up doing a development in Aberglasslyn, and the value of those places didn't really change for some 5 years, where in Medowie the property value doubled. And I had that gut feeling we should have done that, but we listened to took some other advice. And I didn't really know why I was getting this feeling of what we should be doing. And it's like, don't have all your eggs in one basket. But as we gained experience, can look back and go, that's what that feeling was, and that's why that happened. And now where we're at now, when I get that feeling, it's like, okay, I remember when I didn't listen to it last time. Let's do this. And that's why we downsized a little bit last year. And now it's worked out really good.
Mm.
So there was some strategy, but then some intuition, kind of spiritual guidance, I guess. Not even spiritual, but not a science back kind of plan. It was like, this is just what I'm feeling we need to do. And it's worked out pretty good.
So what do you think of the idea that, you know, people say, you need to get 10 investment properties in 10 years? Do you think that's a good strategy to have? Or would you look back on what you did and go, hang on, probably would have been better to have done less properties but in a more balanced and more risk-adverse way?
I wouldn't change what I did. It's definitely set us up. I would have done more if the market would have let us. if we would have bought him a dowry at the start, we probably would have got to 10.
Mm.
And I think that the whole reason that we stopped where we did was the market started to shift.
Mm.
And I guess as far as comfort zone, I like to see the investment properties. So I was never comfortable with out of state or places I couldn't see. So that was probably outside the comfort zone. But if I could drive an hour and see the place, then I felt comfortable doing that. And that's my own limiting stuff. But not sure where
it is a journey, though, in the sense that, like, when you think about Medowie, and for the listeners that might be anywhere, you might not sort of know about this, but so there's a RAF base at Medowie, and Medowie's been through some ups and downs over the last 20 years. You know, you had the contamination issue from a while ago, and you know, being in that pocket between sort of Nelson Bay and Newcastle, you know, and you bought your first home there as well, and the market's did okay there for a season, but you wouldn't have said it was, you know, going gangbusters there for the first probably 5 to 8 years, would you?
When we bought our first property,
yep.
I feel like we bought at the top of the market then. And I think I don't believe the value of our place changed for maybe 5 years, and we'd renovated it, and it probably went up the cost of the renovation, and then it just went a little bit crazy. And then it leveled out, and then.
But correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, you know, this is more your area, but we tend to find that that's what property does, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It can do nothing for 5, 6, 7 years, and then all of a sudden you wake up 2 years later and it's gone gangbusters.
And it's doubled its price.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it's flat for the next 5 years, you know. And then there's also other factors that, you know, come into that, you know, whether it's contamination or, you know, they build a new highway near it or put an airport or whatever else.
Yeah, we definitely seen that. And when we bought our first place, like, if we don't buy now, we're never going to be able to buy. And we just had to buy something. Yep, so we felt like we had to buy something. And then it was like, because all I wanted to do was buy investment property. I didn't want to buy a house to live in. And it was like, I wanted that equity to go again. And it's like, it's not doing anything.
Gotta wait 5 years.
Gotta wait 5 years. Like, I'll go in the mine so that, you know, on paper we're earning more money.
Yeah.
And then that allowed us to do the next. We did a development, a subdivision, and it was like 5 years there. So this was our property investment was really slow for 10 years.
But I think that is part of understanding property. Property is a 5 to a 10 year game. You know, it's not a 1 or 2 year game, you know?
Yeah, so I think like in our first 5 years, we were in our own home. Not a lot of equity increase, but we were paying the loan down. We did our renovations. That increased the value of the place, but the market didn't increase. Then we did our first development, and it was 3 or 4 years. And then once we had equity in there and we're able to do the next one, it was kind of that's when the market started to move. And we did like 3 houses, like back to back. It's like I bought the next block of land before we had a handover for that one, and it just and then the market went.
So I wanted to just pivot to a different topic, and that's around mentorship. You know, through your life, we often talk at Help My Wealth about mentorship and the importance of having people that you can talk to, whether it's a professional advisor or just someone that you know that's really good in that area. Have you had mentors in your life that you have been able to count on and help you through, you know, different processes?
I've had a couple of... I guess you would say they were mentors, but they weren't someone I would keep in contact a whole lot with. You know, all of my financial advice and crazy ideas I've run past Hamish. And like, Hamish has always been in my corner. Although, like, I spent a lot of time in the comfort zone, Hamish was maybe a little less risk averse than I was. So I was like, oh, I think about doing this. But there was always the questions that made you think about what you're doing. And I come with plenty of ideas. And not all of them got executed. And if I wasn't bouncing some of that stuff off Hamish, like, I would have just been bullet a gate. And it's like, we're just doing this, and maybe it would have worked out, maybe it wouldn't. But the questions that I got asked made me think about it and go, maybe that's not that good. Where I would have just rushed in. So like, there's huge amount of value in having that person in the corner to have to bounce that off and have that opinion and run that past. And like, I feel that having trust in that person is massive as well. And I've known Hamish for, I was 19, 20 years, and like, I don't even call anybody else. It's just, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And I'll often get, oh, what about this? What about that? It's like, oh, you got me.
I didn't think of that. And look, that reminds me of a story. Robert Kiyosaki, who's, you know, worldwide property investor and has written many books and so forth. One of the things he often talks about is, you know, he's got his accountant, he's got his solicitor, he's got these different advisors that he runs these crazy ideas by that he wants to do. And he doesn't always take their advice, do you know what I mean? Because sometimes he goes, oh, I specifically choose people that are risk adverse. You know, most solicitors and accountants are pretty risk adverse. He goes, whereas I'm not. But I need people that I can actually count on to come back at me with those important questions, because it makes me then go and actually think about it and ask the questions. Now, I may not actually take their advice every time, but I still need to have them to hear those questions to go, okay, what's this decision I'm making? Is this right? Should I do this new development? Should I do this new investment? Or should I hold off, you know, or like you've said, or like what you've done recently, and actually consolidate, you know, consolidate some of those assets so that they're actually now all cash flow positive, and then you can, you know, go back out again later.
Yeah.
But I think that's an important point, isn't it? It's good to have those people that you can trust around to be able to bounce those questions off.
Oh, definitely. And Robert Kiyosaki is probably where it all started for me.
Yeah.
Rich Dad Poor Dad, we got all the books.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was my model. And
if I buy the board game, will you play it with me? Or?
I think we might even have it.
Yeah.
It'll be stashed in the dungeon somewhere.
It's been played once.
But like, I think that without having the mentor or the people, the right people to ask the questions by and to trust, especially for things that you're not an expert in. Mm. Like I'm not an expert in accountancy or you know, financial planning, and like I've learned a lot of stuff along the way, but
yeah.
It's my job to come up with crazy ideas, not to analyze them. Mm. And like it's not my strength to analyze some of the stuff. It's like I've got so many ideas and it's like, yeah, we should do this. And then it's like, okay, well, I need to check. It's like, what about that? What about that? It's like, okay, that's not going to work.
It sounded good until you said that.
give me a few minutes. I need to think about this. And there's probably been lots of long silences while processing. But like, my whole idea has been squashed.
But I think also when the idea gets off the ground, like, because I think about it as well, because you went through a good couple of years where you had a business coach as well, didn't you? And, you know, and you might sort of sit back and sort of reflect on that differently to what I did. But, I mean, I think he actually, you know, he gave you the confidence to try different things because it wasn't just you doing it on your own. It was somebody going on that journey with you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, that doesn't mean every decision you made was right, because I think the more decisions you make, the more chances you're going to get one or two of them wrong.
Yeah.
So, but actually going on that mentoring journey, and you might not call a business coach a mentor, but I think there is some similarities in there in the sense that, yeah, I mean.
Oh, there's definitely encouragement through that to step out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And see things differently. And had I have not had any of those people, I probably would have learned some harder lessons or still been in that cycle. And some of was even having somebody help you acknowledge where you're at. It's like you're turning over $2 million a year here. Like you're doing good. You've got a pretty good margin. Like stop a second here and have a look. Like you need to acknowledge what's going on here.
I think it's called smelling the roses.
Yeah, and I've had that at, you know, with the accountant a few times. We go in at the end of the year and it's like, yeah, this is looking pretty good. And it's like, we never even stopped and looked at it. It's like, we're just doing the thing. And to have those people go, like, this is, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, what you're doing is working here and you need to stop and appreciate this. And having those people just, and like that's really just the slowing down and looking at it and where just like being able to appreciate that. And things are working pretty good and you're doing lots of things good. There's always going to be challenges. And like I remember that business coach said, you're either in turmoil, coming out of turmoil, or about to go into turmoil.
I remember a conversation we had one day where I think you rung me, and it was one of those times when you had like 6 to 8 months worth of work booked. And I think there was a particular year where we had a lot of rain, right? And, you know, of course, in your industry, the more rain you have, the harder it is to get the work finished. And there was that, you know, you were really stressed, you know, because of this risk of letting people down. But on the same token, not many businesses could turn around and say, I'm booked out for 8 months, you know, and so, and that came
from. And I'm turning away people.
Yeah, that comes from hard work and delivering on expectations and creating good outcomes for people and being reasonably priced and all of those things that you were doing well. But all you could do was go, I can't make another phone call. I can't tell someone else that I've got to bump them another couple of weeks, you know. That's just one of those things that I just remember going, wow, okay. It's a tricky scenario to be in for anyone. Mm-hmm. You know? So, but look, I guess we'll go, you know, what we want to do is just try and give you, I mean, I'm really intrigued a little bit, you know, just for the listeners as well, because you're taking a bit of a about turn at the moment, aren't you? So you're in this process of not stopping the landscaping business, but really trying to simplify it. Is that the right word to
Yeah, so in? I guess it's a way for me to give back to a few of the guys and take on a little bit of semi-retirement from landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still going to do sales and project management, and we're peeling right back to just me as a one-man band and all the guys being subcontractors.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the ability to make a few extra bucks. I'm going to mentor them into running their own business, and I get to wake up in the morning when it's pouring down rain and just go, how good is that for the garden? What am I going to do with all this stuff? So it's going to help them. They've got young families they want to get ahead, help them in that. I'm going to mentor them into their own businesses. It allows me to step back a little bit. And my journey with the breath work and how much it's helped me, I want to share some of that. So stepping back into that's allowing me to step a little bit into that breath work space and share some of that with a lot of people that maybe they're in a similar sort of spot. And it might not even be business. It might be just family and a job and so many things that just feel like they're on top of you all the time.
Mm.
And just being able to have some tools to create a little bit of space.
So for those that don't understand, so you went away for this retreat, you did the breath work for 5 days and ice baths and holistic sort of camp. You've come back and you've really got more involved in that. So what is it actually for you? You know, what's the way of just describing what breath work is and how it's actually helped you and affected you?
So if I can just add to that, so this journey's happened over a couple of years.
Yeah.
It hasn't just happened in 5 days and then bang, he's had this, you know.
So 2020,
it started with a 5 day
camp. 2022, when I come back from that retreat instructor training, life was really good for about 3 months.
Mm.
And next Christmas, I had the same nervous system breakdown.
Mm.
Somewhere in between there, I woke up in the middle of the night having a panic attack, thought I was having a heart attack.
Mm.
Like, Alana actually guided me back to the breath. It's like, but it freaked me out. Like, I woke up in the middle, I was asleep.
Mm.
Woke up, thought I was having a heart attack. And then by the Christmas, I was in the same spot.
Mm.
I'd learned the tools in a intense sort of period.
Mm.
And then over time, I kind of just let everything slip back.
Yep.
To end up in the same spot. And then it was like, this is not happening again.
Mm.
And since then, I've done 2 more facilitator trainings, different style of breath work, deeper, more intense, 6 months periods at a time, where I was able to make really long-lasting change.
Mm.
So it has been... It's been more than 5 days. It's been a couple of year process where it's been, oh yeah, this is great. And then I've learnt the lesson of what happens if nothing changes. Like, you can create a lot of space, but if you're doing the same habitual things, you'll go back to the same spot. And it happened.
Mm.
And 12 months apart, same the next Christmas, I was in the same spot. So I've learned that, yes, we can create the space, but if we don't change some of our daily habits, we'll end up in the same space.
And you've moved into a trainer role, you know, within the breathwork?
So I facilitate breathwork both on a one-on-one scenario and in a group scenario.
Mm.
A lot of what I like to do is all based around trauma. So we store 95% of our trauma within our body. Mm. So sometimes we can talk through stuff, but it's kind of like an underlying blueprint that's in your body. And if you've ever tried to give up an addiction, even if it's coffee or change your coffee shop, habitually you just keep going back to the same thing.
Mm.
We have the ability to access the subconscious and the unconscious and the nervous system and allow the nervous system to unwind and heal itself and to change some of those unconscious conditionings and things that we're habitually doing even though they're not for our highest purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool, and I think that having that space for myself in the business has allowed me to also see myself almost from a third person.
Yep.
So where in the past, like Hamish might have said, what do you think about this? Or maybe we should consider that, or let's get to some of this. I was just stuck in there with the blinkers on. It's like, you don't know what's going on, Hamish.
You don't know how to lay tiles.
This is landscape, but this is different. Like, I was just like, I heard what you're saying, but wasn't listening.
So focused.
Yeah, it was just like this. I can't make the change. And then once I started to allow some of this stuff to kind of just unwind, I was actually giving myself the advice, but able to actually take it on and make the change. So it might have been very similar advice that I was getting externally, but that advice was kind of like just bouncing off because like I was in this bubble.
And it's the same sort of thing that people talk about, with, you know, whether it's meditation, whether it's, you know, just centering yourself or whatever, but getting to that place where you're, you know, actually able to just sit and in stillness and think about, or let your brain think about where you're at and what you're doing.
And there's so many different modalities, and breathwork's not, I'm not here to say breathwork's the only modality that works.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about being able to slow down, get a little bit out of the head and into the body. And in the body is where the intuition is. In the head, we have the ego there, which is, you know, our prefrontal cortex, so our newest human brain. That's where all the stories come from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big thing, that the ego wants to keep us safe based off past experiences. So what everything that I've done in the past was what the ego felt safe. And if Hamish gave me advice and said, maybe we should do this, or, and that was the ego's going, no, we can't do that because it's unknown.
Mm.
Like even like going to a different coffee shop, like we can't go over there. They might see somebody else. So it just keeps us on this same loop of the same thing. So trying to make change is hard because it doesn't understand something different.
Mm.
So like whether even like a drug addict will know, like, I've got to stop doing this. But the ego knows that if I do this, I know what the result's going to be. It's predictable, even if it is detrimental to their life.
Mm.
If we stop doing this, I don't know what's going to happen if we stop. So the ego just keeps us on this loop. And the breath work for me has been able to short circuit that loop and allow me to make change and see things just from a different perspective or through a different lens, to be able to go, oh, we need to do that, or let's do this, or even to get out of the comfort zone. But the ego is keeping us in that comfort zone. And the more you try and keep it on its toes, like even lately, I will go to the gym at different times of the day just so that I don't create a habitual thing of 4:30 is the time we train every day.
Yeah.
Trying to just do different things so that I don't end up in a pattern.
Mm.
And one of the reasons why I'm really intrigued by this as well is because I think, you know, for generations we've sort of known some of this stuff. You know, like, it's funny and it's random, but I'm watching the Shogun show on Disney at the moment, and you know, the last night's episode or whatever was, you know, the guy just having to face a really difficult decision. So, but rather than getting angry or frustrated or, you know, anything like that, he spent 24 hours. He said, "I'm not going to make a decision until tomorrow night," and then he basically just meditated, you know, and spent time on his own. And so, you know, to me, there's this, you know, and everyone says, slow down, right? Just slow down and think about it. But then when you're running at 100 miles an hour, unless you can actually almost reprogram yourself to slow down, all you do is you get 5 minutes later and just go, nah, I can't do it.
Yeah. So what, a little bit behind that, I guess, is the nervous system has two sides, like a sympathetic and a parasympathetic. Sympathetic is your fight or flight. And so often through, you know, just receiving emails and stuff is stimulating that sympathetic drive, and drinking coffee stimulates that. So we end up in this cycle of sympathetic drive and become addicted to the hormones released from sympathetic drive. Yeah, so the body gets addicted to the stress hormones, and then it doesn't know how to switch off.
Mm.
So when someone says, slow down, take a minute, like, or sit and meditate, like you sit there and meditate, and it's like, what am I supposed to be doing? I'm thinking about, not thinking about, thinking what, you just can't switch off because you're in that sympathetic drive. And what I've found with the breath work is it's able to short circuit that system. It's like a reset of the nervous system. And then you're able to experience the parasympathetic, which is the rest and digest. And then the body's like, oh, okay, so what is this? Where's the voice? And I've had a lot of people go, what's going on? I don't recognize this. No, this can't be right. And that's the parasympathetic. That's the slowdown. That's the wheels have stopped turning. That's where the magic happens. That's where you see. That's where you get your messages, your intuition. But because a lot of time we're stuck in this sympathetic drive, we don't know how to slow down. Like we can't stop that. And I found that for me, the tool that has worked best for me has been the breath work to short circuit that. And now, like, I could never meditate, but now I can. And I just needed something to break the cycle.
So I noticed you've said the magic twice tonight, all right? So there was the magic happens in between the busyness, all right? So, and then the second one was the magic happens when, sorry, finish my sentence for me. Do you remember what you said? Because I've just forgotten. So the magic happens when you break the cycle.
Yeah, and you're able to slow down, and it's just in that, really that connection to humanness, like to being. And that magic is just what life's really about.
And mate, we're going to have to do a whole another podcast on this, all right? So, but you know, it is a really fascinating topic, and you know, I guess you know, over time, you know, it might be good to get you back, or maybe you can do a module for us on the Help My Wealth Learning platform on this as well, so that people can actually get a bit more information. So, Steve, but look, you know, why don't you get into our final sort of...
Look, we do have a couple of questions we ask all, I guess. And the first one is, you know, what would you tell your 18-year-old self if you could go back? What bit of advice, what tip would you tell them?
I think for me personally would be to have more value on community and connection.
Yeah.
To have more people around me.
It's not just all about hard work.
Just not the lone wolf. I think the day of the lone wolf is done, and it gets a lot harder to build that community around you later in life.
Yeah. Which is a really powerful thing to be saying in today's society, when loneliness is such a big thing, you know. So more and more people are staying at home. They're not connecting community and things like that. So
There's so much value in connection, and it's only been maybe the last 18 months that I've put value in it.
Yeah.
And it's hard to make it happen.
Yeah.
I've really got to work on it to try and make connection. where I feel that if I worked more and valued it more when I was younger, one, it'd be more natural now and I would have people around me. So it's just a little bit harder to get out and connect and meet people and resonate with the people that are on my sort of wavelength or frequency.
Yeah. The other question we ask everyone is if you're going to write a book, or maybe you're thinking about writing a book, what would the title be?
It'd be something like Reflections. Just super simple.
Reflections of a lone wolf?
Of a reformed lone wolf?
Yeah, I think something. Like I just reflections in looking back, and it's only been very recently that I've taken the time to acknowledge where I've come from and what I've done, and I really love starting to love doing this stuff and being able to look back on it because it's something I haven't done a lot of.
Mm.
And just that reflections is sort of like this is all reflecting on that stuff. And, maybe one day.
Yeah, one day. Yeah,
that's great. Well, look, Chris, thank you so much for coming along. We've really appreciated talking to you and the time that you've given us.
Yep.
And it's just been great having you to just discuss your life and you know, how that's gone on with your business and health and journey and so forth.
That life is hopefully less than halfway through.
That's right. Well, guys, at Helpful Wealth, we're all about empowering your financial journey and doing that in a balanced and safe way. And today we've talked to Chris and got his journey. So I hope that you've enjoyed it the same way we have. And we'll see you again next time. Thank you and bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The information discussed by the Help My Wealth and the Money Rules podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only and is general in nature and it is not advice. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal or tax advice. It is aimed to provide a general understanding of each topic and should not be relied upon to make an investment or financial decision. It is strongly suggested that you seek professional advice regarding your own individual circumstances before making a financial decision. Help My Wealth and the hosts of the Money Rules and Money Rules podcast are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. In the spirit of reconciliation, Help My Wealth and the Money Rules or Money Rules podcasts acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to past, present and emerging elders. We extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.